Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts in Norwood, Mass. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, mixed martial arts. And I'm here with my co-host, Dan Robin. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
What is it, July 24th?
Is that correct? Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, July 24th.
Yeah. You doing all right?
Doing okay. I went running. I heard that the average American put on 19 pounds during this quarantine. So that's a lot to be average. But I feel like I'm not that far off.
You've always been a little bit above average.
I like to try to beat the average. Yeah, this is like the fat episode.
This is the fat episode.
The fat episode of the podcast.
We're both
feeling kind of fat.
I'm fatter than ever. I have not gained 19. I would say I've gained close to 10, I think.
Yeah, I haven't gained 19 either.
Maybe 9.
But I probably edge you out a little. I'm not trying to one-up you.
Yeah.
Not 19, but yeah.
Don't feel good about it.
Yeah. So I went running today, hurt. And then I'm cursing myself the whole time. I'm like, why don't I just stay fit and then this wouldn't hurt so much?
How long did you take off from running?
It's always sporadic with me. Yeah. Like I was, so this was, it's probably only a week since I last ran, mm-hmm. but then it was like not great before that. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it hurt. It's hot out. I read the book you lent me, A Fighter's Mind, that we talked about on this podcast. And there's one point that actually really helped me with running. And I think it could help a lot of people with working. I think we brought it up.
Okay.
But I want to re-bring it up, because I was really using it today and for the last few times I've ran, which is there's a guy, a maniac in the book, who's like one of the long distance runners.
Oh, right.
He runs 100 miles, 160 miles, something like that. You know, that
ultra marathoners.
I mean, there's something crazy, right? I mean,
it's like bonkers. They literally eat pizzas during the race, right?
Yeah. So they finish a marathon and they're like, I don't feel like I'm done running, right? They're like, I'm just kind of getting in my second wind.
It's starting to loosen up.
I mean, and I think these ultra marathoning or the fastest marathoners, you could make a good case that is the most impressive or insane physical feat that any human does. Hmm. To run a marathon at that pace, like for the top marathoners, they're literally
5 minute miles, right?
It's literally like a regular person couldn't match them for a quarter mile. Like you couldn't keep up with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just for 26 miles. It's insane.
They're sprinting for 26 miles.
Yeah. An outright sprint for 26 miles. Like it would be hard to keep up with them for a 100-yard dash.
Mm.
And then these guys like finish at not quite world-class speed, but pretty fast. And then they're like, I'm going to do another one or two. One guy was running 60 miles. This guy ran 60 miles a day for weeks. But anyway, so I would think there's very little I could learn from a guy like this. And I think you mentioned, though, this one quote that it didn't stick to me when I first read it or when you mentioned it because it's worded in a way that just doesn't resonate with me. He says something like, it's like, it never doesn't always never get worse. It never doesn't always sometimes get better or worse. You know, something where I'm like, I can't understand what you're saying. I'm exaggerating a little, but it's like there's
Something like it doesn't always get worse? Is that it?
But it was
never in there too?
No, yeah. It never. Oh, it never always gets worse.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the actual quote for people that think I'm like, right. Wait, what? Like, that's my reaction. It never always gets worse. So that doesn't really resonate with me. But then I realize a little bit what he meant when I read the book, when it's like, so the quote doesn't do it for me, but he was saying basically if he's running 60 miles and it starts to hurt at 10 miles, that's when you can really psych yourself out. Like you can be like, if I'm hurting this bad at 10 miles, I'll never make it to 60.
And
I started thinking
it's going to be six times worse or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I started thinking that anytime I start to be like feeling really bad running, it's almost like a mental panic where you're like, I'm not going to be able to take it. like your pain is going up at this trajectory and you're like, I can't maintain this. Like if it keeps hurting this bad and I'm halfway done. So it might be instead of 60 miles, it's like this, instead of mile 10 out of 60, it's like mile one out of six. And it's sort of like, I'm hurting so much now, I can't imagine bearing this. And then his realization is it doesn't keep on that trajectory. Right. So like if just bear it out and you can actually feel better.
Yeah.
He was saying you might feel better at 50 miles than you did at 10.
Yeah.
And what I was realizing is sometimes, I mean, I never really start panicking at 1 mile, but sometimes I can literally be like 2 miles in and be like, how am I going to finish this run? And then maybe at 3 miles or 4 miles, it doesn't hurt as much. I feel better.
Yeah. And, that's a good one, actually.
So it's sort of like just bear with it a while and mentally don't think, don't get that panicky feeling. And I think it applies to jiu-jitsu, right? Where like,
definitely,
there's those moments where you're like, I can't breathe or I'm getting smashed or something. And look at it this way. No one, I think no one that's getting smashed or has that panicky feeling would tap out if there was 5 seconds left, say, right? If you knew there was 5 seconds, even 10 seconds left, you'd be like, all right, I can deal with this for that long.
Yeah.
So, but your thought is like, there's more than 10 seconds. I can't deal with this for the next minute and a half. And so the panic comes in and you're like, I just can't stand it.
Yeah.
But if you just, but you know, you could do 10 seconds. So I guess what I took, my take home message was do the 10 seconds, right? Like, do, like hang in there a little longer and maybe you'll be like, actually, I'm starting to be able to breathe or I'm starting to feel better. And I'm not, it's not getting worse and worse. I'm not getting more and more short of breath. And I was actually using it on the run where I was like, I'm not going to let myself get. So it's two things. One is that it doesn't actually get worse. And the second is mental, where you don't allow yourself to get that like
that anxiety.
Horrible anxiety. Like, I don't know if I can take this. This hurts really a lot. Like,
then maybe just trying to remember what the stupid quote was. It took your mind off the discomfort.
I think it took me a half a mile. I was like, never.
Never, always.
It never always doesn't get worse, something like that.
Seldom use always and never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I think I might have realized what he meant during the during a run. I'm like, is that what he meant? It's just that don't panic, like you might feel better later. So it's like what he said was, and he has these insane runs, he'd say the only way you can find out how you're going to feel at 30 miles in is get there.
Right.
You know, get there and see how it feels. Maybe it'll really hurt a lot, but maybe you'll feel better. So I would say that with even for jiu-jitsu, those panicky moments, I think it happens real fast, right? You're like, I can't breathe. I got to tap. It's like, just hang in and see if you feel a little better and give yourself 10 seconds and then maybe give yourself another 10, you know, be like, let's see, maybe I'll feel a little better. And then that way you could ride some things out.
Definitely. Yeah.
I used to think that about some of the submissions too.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do it so much with an armbar or something where something's going to break.
Right.
But some of the chokes,
yeah,
it was like, I'm not really blacking out, so let me just see.
Yeah.
I think people panic tap sometimes when it's like,
definitely,
maybe just wait. You might still have to tap, but give it another 5 seconds.
Sometimes, Dan, I'll like decide in a role with one of my students that I'm not even going to defend the choke, really. Just sort of defend. So in other words, I'll let him go north and south and do like a north-south choke. And I just defend by like opening up my mouth and shrugging my arms, my shoulders up. But I don't really try to do anything with my hands. And because I'm sort of allowing myself into it, I can keep a really calm state of mind. It's similar to what you're saying.
And then it's probably harder to...
It's way harder for them to get to finish. And then they get frustrated because you're like... You're not even freaking trying to defend. You're just lying there, and I still can't finish it. They get psyched out a little bit too. Yeah, but I think there's something to having that real calmness of your mind, and allows you to focus better. And
it hurts less for the pain, like for running for me. If I can calm down, it's almost like if I have a mindset, I had it today, where it was like, all right, I can't breathe and my legs hurt, but who cares? And that's like not that unpleasant, if you know what I mean. You're sort of like, yeah, everything hurts, but I don't really care. And if you can get to that, that's good. It's more like when you start going, oh, wow, oh, I'm halfway done and I've got a hill coming up and that's going to suck and I'm hot. Like, that's when things really start to
almost
hurt.
When you're resisting the pain, it's worse than if you're kind of not resisting it.
Right.
When I was doing my marathon running way back when, I had this simple concept, probably similar, where I would say, well, I can always do one more step. Right. And then I would just use that overly simplified thinking to just keep doing a bunch of more steps.
It's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, I know I can go a little bit longer, so let's just do that, see where we are.
Have you ever fallen down and defecated while you're out there running?
I have not.
That would be the sign that you probably should stop running.
I don't think I've done either. In high school, I ran until I, like some of the practices, I ran. I think I threw up a time or two.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm not positive. That's just like a bot, like you see it with the cross country races. Like,
right.
It's just the heat and the exertion just overloads you. I can't specifically remember doing it, but I feel like I have. That's a while ago. It's not going to happen now because I'm not going to push myself that hard, you know?
Right. It doesn't make sense.
You don't have a coach screaming at you. You're not going
to
push yourself.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That hard.
Right. Back when I was doing those hill sprints, I got nauseated several times and dizzy and not fun.
So how long are you running to go up the hill? Like ballpark?
90 seconds.
So that's long.
Yeah. Where half of it really sucks. It's long. And then I got Jesse McGillicutt to come with me a couple times and be like a pacer. Like, he would be halfway up the hill. So it's easier to run against somebody than just pushing yourself, because your mind wants you to slow down. You know, it's really hard to keep getting the maximum output, you know?
Yeah, especially hill runs where
your
brain's going to be going, knock it off, right? Like, your whole body's going to be screaming at you. But if someone, he is a pacer and it's an audience, right? It's like someone watching you. You don't want to just quit or motivation.
Yeah. And it just keeps, when you're going up a hill the way this hill was designed, it just kind of keeps getting harder. Like it doesn't
steeper,
like level off. Yeah, just very slightly. Yeah, really funny. So glad I'm not doing those. I think I'm never going to do those again.
Right.
Can't be healthy, right?
I don't know.
I'm getting older, Dan, right? That's crazy, right? To go to the point where you're going to throw up or on the verge of it. I don't think that's probably healthy, right?
Yeah, but it probably helps your cardio. I feel like I keep running and running, and it's sort of not, I need to do something like sprint up a hill to try to make a jump forward.
Yeah, add a different stimulus into what you're doing. Yeah, that probably makes sense. Well, Dan, last episode, we talked about this book, The Mindful Athlete,
right,
by George Mumford. And I got a lot out of this book, man. Wow. And we didn't get through the whole thing, so I got a lot more notes from it if you want to hear some of it.
I would love to.
All right, let's go. So the first note I have is, he's talking about being in the zone and flow state. You know how people talk about that stuff all the time. It's almost been overdone, right? And he said something in here that I thought was interesting. I don't know what to think about it. I was actually curious about your thoughts because, you know, you're kind of a, what we say, cynical person? No, you're not cynical, but, you know, you're a critical thinker. He said they were describing being in the zone and the flow state, and they said something to the effect in here of everyone and everything seemed connected, like this idea of, like, of that total, you know, we're all just a bunch of atoms floating.
Who was saying it, though? Like, were the athletes?
The athletes, or maybe it was one of these guys who wrote a book about it. You know, this chick sent me eye or whatever, one of these guys, you know. Have you ever had that feeling like everything is one? You know what I mean? You ever had that feeling?
I have not. Have
Interesting.
You?
I think I have, actually, yeah, in team sports. You know what I mean? Where, like in a football game where you're just moving around, and it's hard to describe when the other team and you, it just seems like it's like a...
Wouldn't it be more like you're just having clarity of vision of what everyone's doing?
I think so, in such clarity that it feels like you're all of a piece and you're all moving together.
See, that's what I think of being in the zone, It's just like everything's right for you. Your body feels good. Your brain feels good. Everything slows down for you.
Yeah.
But I'm not someone that, like, I don't think literally everything's slowing down for you, or you're connected with everyone else. I think you're just processing it that way. And then I think it can feed on itself because there's confidence. I actually, like, then you just feel like I'm in the zone. And so then it snowballs because you're like, you feel good. You feel confident. You feel loose.
Mm.
And then you can even miss a few and you're like, I'm still in the zone and get me the ball. I heard a thing way back a million years ago. I was in college and one of my stats professors published a study that said he looked at the data and there was no such thing as the zone. Like, I think it was for basketball.
I think you were saying there's no such thing as a hot streak or something.
Hot streak, but it was, he applied it to the zone. Like, people were like, get me the ball. I'm on hot streak.
I'm hot. It's the same thing.
And how I learned it was that he said, there's no really such thing, you know, there's blah, blah, blah. Like, and he said he contacted these different coaches. Of all people, he contacts Bobby Knight with this information. And they were all sort of like,
did he throw a chair at him?
Nerd. You know, like, keep crunching your numbers, nerd. I'm getting my ball to the guy on the hot streak. I don't care what you say. And when I learned it, we were sort of all the snobby college kids laughing at dopey Bobby Knight and dopey coaches that weren't listening to our smart professor. As I got older, I'm like a little suspicious of the professor, and back with the coaches, I'm a little like, do you really think there's no such thing as a hot streak? Like, I think there is. Like, I think
there obviously is. You know how you know for sure? There's such a thing as being really cold.
Right.
Like, you know, what if I ate some weird meal the night before and my stomach's all upset and I feel like shit, I'm not going to perform as well. So if performance can be completely degraded, then it could be not degraded.
Right.
So somebody who is like,
why wouldn't it? Yeah. Like,
so one of the guys, his performance is not degraded at all. He had the perfect meal, the perfect night's sleep, the perfect hydration. Yeah. And then he's going to be more effective than he usually is. So that's a hot streak. So you give that guy the ball. I mean, like,
I don't think you can convince me with data that it doesn't make sense that wouldn't exist, that no one would ever have a hot streak, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why not?
Totally agree.
I don't see why not. So
They also try to come up with data that there's no such thing as clutch hitters or clutch players.
Right, it's all the same thing. Right?
And I think if you have any athletic experience, you're like, no, well, there's some people, their nervous system suffers more under pressure than others, so their performance degrades. So the one whose performance doesn't degrade under psychological pressure, that's the clutch guy. I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know? And these knuckleheads with their data and their bogus research. Yeah, they can come up with anything.
We're the dopey coaches. Yeah. We're the dopey
guys
going against the college professors. But I think
anything like that where there's really no such thing as intelligence. There's different kind. And then you feel like saying, okay, think of the dumbest person you know, all right?
Yeah.
Do you want them performing brain surgery on you or do you want the brain surgeon doing it, you know? It's like obviously there's different levels of intelligence.
Yeah. And I do think in baseball, I know there's cases where there's someone who choked a bunch of times and then they do well in the postseason. Like, I think David Price was one. And so I think you can choke one time and then do well another time under pressure or the reverse.
Yeah.
But that doesn't say anything against the argument that different people are prone to doing one or the other.
It's probably related to your nervous system and personality, and that's across the population. It all gets plotted out on a bell curve, right? So you're going to have some super clutch people. Alex Honnolds of the world that can go free solo up El Capitan, that's a clutch performance right there, okay? And then there's other people that could never do anything like that. So,
But there's just noise in life, right? Like, so...
Well, most people are in the top of the bell curve, right? Yeah. So that's where most of us are. So for most of us, you can't tell the difference between whether we're clutch or no clutch. But when you look at the outliers, you see, there are outliers.
And then circumstance happens, right? Like, it can be like, generally he chokes, but the batter, he got a key strikeout and that helped his confidence. Yep. And then, or the opposite. Alex Honnold could slip off a rock one day. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, and then maybe that rattles them, or you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You can sort of,
yeah.
There's noise in there.
There's noise in there.
But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Totally. Yeah. Funny how when people don't want to, this has been a theme I think we've had, Dan, where people don't want to use energy to think and just like kind of use some common sense or some of this research to say, does that really make sense?
Yeah.
And yeah, very interesting.
All society is plagued with it right now, too.
Oh, my God. Okay. So then in this book, Mr. Mumford's book, he was somehow talking about life. You know what? I was going to read these quotes, but I can't read the book. My eyesight, I'm becoming so decrepit, Dan, that I can't read any of this stuff anymore. And if I turn the light on.
You can still turn the pages, right?
I could. Yeah.
I just want level. It's been a couple weeks.
Sort
I don't know
of.
How much, how far down you've.
Sort of, but.
How they, far they all, down you've sunk.
But they all kind of meld together. Sometimes I flip three or four all at once, and then I just keep going.
You just swat at it.
Yeah. I put this one quote down. I don't even know what the hell it means. It's about the quest for meaning. I think they're talking about life. It's about the quest for meaning and purpose and blah, blah, blah. I just did a dot, dot, dot.
And it must be related to athletics, right?
I think it's related to flow state and whatever. I don't know. What do you think? Quest for meaning. Are you on a quest for meaning?
A little bit.
You are?
I don't think it's totally, like, I bet you thought I would, like, roll my eyes at that. But I do think
I don't know,
a little
Dan.
Bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think I've told you I am a little bit in a place, because I think you can get to a place and we can relate it back to jiu-jitsu in a minute. But
all right.
It's just sort of like, I kind of got things squared away pretty well.
Right.
In my life.
Yep.
And then once that happens, you can start feeling sort of a emptiness again.
Yeah.
Where you're like,
isn't that weird? Like, once you got all the important things handled, you feel unfulfilled.
Like, well, now what do I do? And you have that quest for meaning, right? You're like,
yeah.
Well, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of like, what's everyone want out of life? They're like, I want to be able, if I could just retire and sit by the pool and watch TV and drink a cocktail. But like, say you get there, then what are you going to, you know, like,
yeah.
How long can you
or
do
I
that?
Would say most people would say they want to have a romantic partner that they respect and they have a mutual affection, good relationship, and healthy children who are relatively successful.
Right.
Like, that's it, right? When you get that covered.
Now what do you do?
Now what do you do? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess a lot of people find a sense of meaning just with their kids, right? That helps you find meaning.
Yeah, that can be part of the search for it.
Yeah.
And then I think, so the smaller scale, so bring it back to jiu-jitsu, right? I think there's different versions of little crises of going, what am I doing this for? Like, what's this for?
Yeah.
And you and a few other people, I feel like, kind of locked in, found the meaning. They're like, I have these certain goals. I'm interested and I'm just fascinated by trying to get better and see how to improve each thing. And you already understand most positions and you're like, how do I improve them a little bit? And so you found what you enjoy from it. Other people aren't at that spot and they might be chasing a belt or chasing some kind of level of respect and then they're not getting it and they finally have that crisis of, is that a crisis of meaning or search for meaning? They're like,
maybe.
Why am I doing this? Like,
no, I think you applied it and you sort of framed it really well for jiu-jitsu. I think what I just started to notice is you can have sort of an abstract goal or you can have a very concrete one. And they both have strengths and weaknesses. Like an abstract goal would be, I just want to master something. I want to master jiu-jitsu. I'm the pursuit of mastery. But ultimately, that's really abstract. So it can be hard every day to go in there, no matter how you're feeling and the circumstances, to say, no, I'm after mastery. I'm after mastery. And mastery is a thing, you know, it's like peeling layers off an onion. Like, you never get there. You know what I mean? It's a purely process-oriented thing.
All the abstract goals are like that. Like,
yeah.
I want to be a good, I want to be able to handle myself well. You're like, well, when are you handling yourself? When does that? That doesn't happen. You're not like,
right.
Oh, today I learned to handle myself well.
Yeah.
Or like, I want to have confidence. Like, well, when does that happen? Like, that's the issue with all these abstract goals.
And the
right?
concrete ones.
I want to be a good blue belt. Like, are you a good blue belt? Like,
right.
Are you, like,
well, I want to get my blue belt is very concrete, right?
Yeah.
So that's like, boom, totally wrap your head around it could be very helpful, I think, in motivating you and keeping you on the path, right? But then it has other weaknesses, because if you pick something like, I want to win this tournament, and then you don't win, then what the hell do you do, you right. know? So it's a little bit more binary, right? Black and white. You're either, it's going to get it or not get it.
You think the idea is to have an overall abstract goal or goals, and then set up concrete goals along the way.
Yeah, that's the probably the way to do it. Yeah,
and that's what you're doing, right? Like, you have these tournaments.
Pretty much.
Because then if you didn't win the tournament, it doesn't, you're not like, well, now I'm done, right? You're like, I'm still sort of progressing my jiu-jitsu. Right.
Yeah.
And there'll be another tournament, and I can just set that up as my next goal.
Yeah. And now, you know, my son trains with me, so it's easy to be motivated to coach your son, because it's just natural. It's what we want to do as human animals, you know?
Yeah.
And then that makes me just a better coach for everyone else, I think. So I'm on that train, which is pretty motivating. And the other thing I'm trying to use my jiu-jitsu for now, Dan, is just to sort of work on myself. And when I feel frustrated, to process my feelings of frustration faster, you know what I mean, when I'm doing jiu-jitsu. And just sort of as a sort of a laboratory or exercise for me to practice mindfulness and, you know, just get out of my animal way, so to speak, or get away from my animal nature a little bit, or get above it just a little bit, because, you know, that's a very long-term abstract thing too, like to sort of be able to step.
But it's interesting. Didn't you also say, especially back in the, like, you also got back into jiu-jitsu to get tap into your animal nature, right?
Yeah.
Like to.
Yeah. So true.
And
right?
Now you're using it to try to
transcend it a little bit, or get above it a little bit temporarily. Yeah. Yeah. But that's obviously, that's something you could spend many lifetimes trying to do. So that's a good thing about it, you know? So my third note here, Dan, this is sort of related. It's, they said the conditions of the mind are not you. So all the emotions you have, things like this, the crazy and not so crazy thoughts you have, you know, this idea of mindfulness, they're thinking, that's not you. And like, sometimes we get carried away with that. And I used to say this thing, Dan, where I came up with this idea, you are not your nervous system.
That's what I was like, that sounds familiar to me. Right. And that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
So I got a funny story about this. Yeah. So the reason, what that means to me is that I think a lot of men, especially when they feel fear or anxiety, there's all these cultural, social implications for that. Oh, I'm a coward, or, you know, however,
I feel embarrassed.
Yeah. However you want to frame that. And that's sort of the reality. Is the human animal, they don't want the males to be weak, you know, and the male is supposed to protect, you know, the family, protect the tribe, go out and hunt and get food. There's really no space for weakness there. You know, we don't want weakness in men. Right.
Right.
If you ever see a man acting really weak and starts crying or something, it's like there's something that's really off-putting.
I see it all the time these days.
It's off-putting, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe it's generational, though. I don't know. It might.
You
be
think it might be less. Changing? I don't know. Maybe you're right. But at any rate, I came up with this idea that I can be very, have a lot of anxiety about competing or whatever, or be afraid, but that's not me. That's just the nervous system that I inherited. Basically, the personality, that ocean, whatever I inherited, that big five personality, you inherit that. But if I work on improving it, that's all that matters, you know?
And what I've noticed too is if you have confidence and you're not, what actually I think where the issue is if you start feeling, it's, bear with me a second, it's like if you start feeling embarrassed about it or awkward, that's where the trouble starts. Because I've seen people that have, if you are basically comfortable with it, like there's pro fighters who are like, can very matter-of-factly be like, yeah, I'm feeling a lot of anxiety before the fight.
Right.
Like, and it doesn't seem as awkward if they're like facing it, like with, like, and I feel like I've got there too, where I can be like, yeah, I feel a ton of anxiety over this. But like, if you say it with sort of confidence, or you know what I mean? Like, then it doesn't seem as awkward or weird. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I totally,
you're
what
just
happens
like, yeah, because then everyone's like, yeah, he's just got anxiety over this thing that's kind of tense. So
when you're hiding that feeling, you're
that's
tapping.
When it gets weird, right?
Yeah, you're tapping into a greater social anxiety, and it sort of magnifies it, and it creates this dread that you're going to get found out, and it just makes it worse, right?
Yeah, and everyone's probably noticing that you look nervous anyway. Well, just picture someone that's sort of sitting there going, "Yeah, no, I'm not scared. I'm fine." Versus someone that's like, "Yeah, I'm tense."
Oh, Dan.
About this,
so, know what happened just yesterday? There was something on Twitter, and it was like a face off between Darren Till and Robert Whittaker. Yeah. They're fighting tomorrow, and I guess people were saying that Till looked nervous or afraid or something. I didn't really care.
I saw and then, one face off where he just wasn't meeting Whittaker's eyes. But
right.
That doesn't mean he's nervous to me.
Well, so then John Kavanagh from SBG Ireland, whatever, McGregor's coach, he tweets something like, or somebody else might have said, oh, the sun was in his eyes. And I think the sun was kind of setting and it was like coming right at him. So he kind of had his eyes closed a little bit. And Kavanagh goes, oh, yeah, all fighters feel fear. The pros learn to deal with it or something like that. So then I chime in with my dopey quote here, you're not your nervous system. Then he turns around and comments, replies to me, Dad. And he goes, yeah, you're not your vascular system either. Pretty banal or something like that. He just takes a healthy dump on my inside.
Kavanaugh did?
Yeah, yeah. So then I replied and tried to explain a little bit more what I meant, but I just thought that was pretty funny.
I missed all that. Was that...
What do you mean?
Where, I missed that exchange. Is it a Facebook exchange?
Twitter.
Oh, Twitter.
Yeah.
That's why.
It's ugly out there on Twitter, Dan. I think it's uglier even than Facebook. I've been doing a lot less Facebooking and Instagramming, and it's not even hard for me to move away from it just because I just wasn't liking what I was seeing and how I was feeling by looking at it. It's not great, right?
Yeah. I already moved away. I never got into Twitter or Instagram very much. And then
I started to get into this stuff because of the pandemic and like, oh, I want to keep up on the stats and everything. And it's probably not healthy, not helpful. You can waste a lot of time and get aggravated.
Yeah.
Get insulted by
you got insulted
B-level
by
celebrities. Yeah.
Well, a known guy though.
Known guy.
I feel like it's not the first time you've been insulted online by B-level celebrity.
It's pretty routine for me. Yeah. Okay. Note number four. I thought this is interesting. This is going to take some discussion, Dan. So, Mr. Mumford, he was teaching meditation in a prison. And so he's got these guys in there. And what he started to notice is periodically over the loudspeaker, the CO, the commanding officer, would come on and be like, attention, everyone, blah, 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 you know, put away your food trays immediately. And he noticed that these guys would be trying to meditate and get in this calm state, and that thing would blare, and they would all get agitated. You know, they had an association of this loudspeaker voice with just
right.
making them feel frustrated and angry or anxious or whatever. And so he was like, how the hell am I going to teach these guys mindfulness and meditation if this thing's blaring all the time? And it's completely random. Like, it's not even every 15 seconds. So it's actually designed to be the most stressful, probably, stimulus that they could think of. So he tried to get them to say, when you hear that thing go off, that is going to be your trigger to practice mindfulness. Do you follow with that?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good idea. I don't know if it'll work, but to try to have them get used to it, basically.
I think it's hard. I think you have to really deliberately try to make that a real practice. And it'd probably take a long time. But if you did, that would be pretty remarkable, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked when I haven't been a big meditation guy. And a few years back, I went to, what's it called? Kripalu?
Kripalu. Yeah.
In Western.
Up there. That's your stomping ground anyways.
I spent a weekend there doing meditation and this kind of stuff. And I was like, I'm shocked at how good I am at this meditation stuff. I was like, I thought, you know, it was like, let's go. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I kind of did it for like 40 minutes. You know, I'd be like, I just kind of sat there and
I'm not surprised.
Was able to really let the time go by and be like kind of surprised when they brought me out of it.
Yeah.
That said, I'm easily distracted. So I think I would have a hard time. And like, if you're not in a setting like that.
But you're emotionally very level though, more than most people. So that probably helps you stay.
Yeah. Like, I don't think, but I'm alert, aware. Like, I can't sleep if there's like if there's a conversation going on, like I hear it. You know what I mean? Like, I have trouble just being like, so I don't think, say this loudspeaker going off, I don't think I'd like flip out or, you know, I'd be relatively calm, but it's hard for me to ignore
What I'm trying to do now, Dan, is develop my own deliberate association. So for me, I don't have a loudspeaker going off, but you know, I'm one of the human animals here. So whenever there's something that sort of, when I hear an alarm from my selfish gene, so to speak, where like I'm afraid I'm going to lose status somehow or lose esteem, and like, oh yeah, like somebody insults me on Twitter, like you feel that. You're like, oh, I'm losing, you know, Twitter, you're losing fake esteem, you're losing pseudo esteem. It's complete nonsense, but your nervous system still registers it. You know what I mean?
Right. You probably have that first urge to yell, say something nasty back or
something. I don't think that, but I feel it. I feel my nervous system fires. So I'm trying to take those moments and use those as triggers to sort of zen out, to calm out and like be mindful and like get back on track and realize that I'm not competing with anybody.
And it's not a personal insult, really.
No, but I think anytime you fear losing status, that's your selfish gene at play. Like in this point, which was probably really important, you know, 75,000 years ago, but today, I mean, does it really matter? I mean,
it's a good thought. So anyone out there, for example, like if someone just like flips you off in traffic,
right,
or anything that spikes your adrenaline, you should be like, use that, think like to calm down. And
yeah, if I can make that deliberate,
especially there's times where you just reassess the situation. Like so just earlier today I was shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I went rogue. I went down the aisle the wrong way. Like they have the arrows.
You badass.
I was like, yeah, I don't play by the rules, John. You know me. I was just like, I'm going down the aisle the wrong way because I need something halfway down. I'm not going all the way around. You know me. So like, I was going down and a woman was coming the other way. And
did she have a smirk? Oh, she was wearing a mask.
Mask, so yeah. I can't tell.
Can't tell.
She's kind of looking at me, like trying to get my eye, and she's like, excuse me. And I'm like, and I, that first, you know, that.
You're anticipating some sort of attack.
Yeah, I'm this
from
close
her.
To being like, what do you want, Karen? You know, like, sorry, Karen, there's only two of us in the aisle. Like, I'm ready to be like, oh, big deal. What's the difference? I only. And then she's like, is your scanner working? Like, you know, like she had the totally innocent, and I'm like, oh yeah, it is actually. Are you having trouble with your, like she was totally being friendly. So like, not only, so if when you get that urge, like that surge of like, oh, there's going to be a confrontation. First of all, sometimes if you have a second, you can reassess it. Like this, that was one example where there was not even a confrontation.
Right.
Another example might be you with the Twitter thing where you might be like, I don't know if it exactly applies, but you might be like, oh, he didn't even really get what I was saying. He's not,
yeah,
not attacking me. He's not, doesn't hate me. He just kind of didn't get what I was saying.
Right.
Like if you have a second to rethink it. And then thirdly, even if they're meaning to attack you, it's like, why not just settle down and not escalate, not make it worse and not make yourself more tense and use it as an opportunity to like build that strength in yourself.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the image I have in my mind is sort of like, I think somebody's used this over the years, some philosopher, you know, we're a charioteer and we have horses that are pulling a chariot and the horses are our selfish gene, our animal nature, and we can let them run amok, but, and they're always going to exist. We can't just ignore them. You know what I mean? You can't just say, oh, I'm going to be celibate for the rest of my life. I mean, it doesn't work that way, right? But maybe you can get some control over those forces, so. That's what I'm trying to do now, Dan. I'll let you know if it's working at all. But how powerful would that be if you had no fear of losing status at all?
Yeah, like you would never feel embarrassed about performance.
That'd be pretty liberating, right? That would relieve a lot of stress, right?
And again, apply it to jiu-jitsu in the gym. If you could really, and I think there's people that are pretty close to this actually already, just naturally. They're just not too...
Maybe, yeah.
They're just not too nervous about their performance.
You know,
they just don't take it. They don't internalize it.
Right.
So there's a spectrum of people, how much they react to that. But I think almost anyone could benefit for... That's a great thought. Like, what if you just didn't care about that at all? Like, you just didn't worry about your status. You know, how wouldn't that be great?
You'd have about 5 extra hours a day on your hands to do whatever you wanted to do, right? Yeah, I think it would be amazing. Yeah, so would definitely help my jiu-jitsu. Your jiu-jitsu would get better because you would come in and only think about jiu-jitsu. You would never spend time thinking about, Jesus, I should be better at this. Why can't I do this yet? I can't believe I let that guy get over
me. I don't want to roll with this person. I do want to roll with that person. Yeah.
Yeah, that would all leave. Yeah. Be amazing, right? Yeah, so that's what I'm working on. I'll let you know if I can pull it off. He has another quote in here that I'm going to bollocks, but what you habitually think largely determines what you ultimately become. What do you think about that, Dan?
Well, you have to say it again. What you...
Never, always, sometimes...
What you never habitually think.
What you never habitually sometimes think, largely, always, seldomly, what you ultimately become. No, what you habitually think largely determines what you ultimately become. It's sort of like, what's that? Aristotle said, you are what you repeatedly do or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard versions of that before, right?
But I guess the thinking sort of informs what you're doing. So, yeah, you got
to get your head on. Well, in sports, they've said that for actions, right? They said, like, how you train is how you'll perform.
Oh,
and this is just putting in the mental realm, right? Like how.
Right.
That's sort of what we're saying, right? Like, work on your work on your mental stuff all the time. We say that different versions of that all the time.
Right. Okay. The next one is, I think he references a book here called Zen and the Art of Archery or something like this. It's a famous book. Have you heard about it?
I heard about it last podcast.
Oh, okay. And they're talking about he becomes one with the perfecting of his technical skill. That's the archer practicing this Zen in archery. And I guess that's what I was talking about, having that long-term goal of just mastering jiu-jitsu and becoming
that. Maybe you didn't talk about it. Maybe it was in the book that I read, or maybe both.
Yeah.
Yeah, to a point, I get it. But you have to, like with a lot of these things, I have to move it around in my mind to something that I like. Like, it's sort of like that quote, like never, don't sometimes.
Oh, right.
It's like,
right.
I got to reword it because I remember one of the quotes was like, and then eventually the archer becomes the arrow or something, where I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know what I mean? There's like some things just leave you cold. But as I've said before, I've learned over the years, I think I used to, if someone says eventually you are the arrow and the target, I used to be like, and I'm throwing the book away. You know what I mean? Like, so now
and
I become more.
The arrow is throwing the stupid book away.
Yeah, exactly. So I just felt like now I've learned to like not react that way and try to be like, let me see if I can get some wisdom out of this.
Dan, I empathize with you. I'm right there with you. Whenever I hear something about leave the ego at the door, pretty much when anybody uses the word ego, I just shut down. I just turn off because it's not meaningful, but you could probably state what they're trying to say in a different way and then it would resonate.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very funny. A lot of these old sort of traditional martial arts concepts and values and sentiments, I'm appreciating more now than I did years ago. I think you probably had this experience where, for me, sort of probably in the 80s, that all of a sudden there seemed to be a lot of BS martial artists, whether they're doing kung fu or karate, and they really weren't walking the talk, but they were just talking. And then you started losing all appreciation for whatever those concepts were.
Right, because it all seemed
silly, yeah. Yeah, they seemed like they were full of shit. But they might have been full of it, but there's still some value in some of those maxims that they were talking about.
Right.
Okay. Oh, now the seventh point is they talk about relaxed concentration. You know, so like if you're competing in something, you want to have...
That's the whole thing in sports, right?
I think so, right?
I think we've talked about that before. I think it's you could argue that as like the center linchpin of all sports, right? If you can relax and focus, you know, which is a hard thing to get both of those things down. But you know what I mean? Like keep your mind clear, keep your body sort of
I'm trying to do that more, even in grappling, Dan, trying to be more relaxed and not bring a lot of tension into what I'm doing. I think if you don't do that, you can't achieve your highest level. Cool. Okay, now the last one, I don't know what he was talking about, but I think they were talking about breathing. You know how breathing is also often a center point for concentration exercises of meditation.
Yeah. Let's say what I think about breathing.
Yeah.
I had this epiphany where I'm like, oh, I've talked my whole life about different kind of exercise, like different physical workouts and different mental things. And I'm like, breathing seems like there's a lot to it that could help you. And like, just if you start thinking more about it. And what I've done is I, about every 4 to 6 months, I go, I really should do something about my breathing or focus
that's
on
so
that.
Funny.
And then I never do anything. So that's not the ideal approach. But that's so far what's been happening with me. I go, I bet there's a lot to it. I bet if I focused on breathing, and I know you do. And I was like, I bet breathing exercises, like, because you know it calms you down. And you know it, you feel better with, you take a deep breath. And you know it's having an effect. And I'm like, it's such a fundamental thing we all do and pay no attention to. And I'm like, I bet there's benefits, easy benefits to be had if I do something with my breathing. And then I never do it.
Well,
but I'm going to try again. I'm going to retry.
Well, think about some basic functions. Eating food. You could go for a couple months without eating food and you would live. Some people, if they have enough body fat, there's people on record who have not eaten for a year because they had so much body fat. You can go without drinking water probably for a fairly long time, right? A few weeks or something less than the eating. Sleep, I think you can go a couple days without sleeping. I think it speaks a little bit to the essential nature of the activity. Breathing,
yeah.
You can't go more than 3 or 4 minutes maybe without training, without breathing. So it's pretty essential. It's pretty important. I just picked up a new book. It's called Breathing. Guy was on Rogan talking about it. Jim Nestor, I think his name was. Did you listen to it at all?
No.
So some of the stuff he was talking about, I came across before. So apparently breathing through your nose is very important. So what happens is in your sinuses, when you breathe in, somehow your body adds different chemicals into the air you're breathing in. Most importantly, I think, is nitric oxide. So that's a vasodilator. So when you're breathing in through your nose, you somehow open up the vessels in your lungs and you create a greater absorption of oxygen and a greater transfer into your blood of oxygen just by breathing through your nose, which I thought was pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
Not obvious. Like you never would have guessed that, right?
It's crazy. I never heard that, yeah.
So when I do my breathing now, I use a pulse oxometer so I can see what level my blood saturation is supposed to be or happens to be. And I find that when I breathe through my nose and I sort of try to fill up my sinus with my breath and only breathe with my diaphragm, keep every other muscle as relaxed as possible, it seems like my blood oxygen goes up much faster than any other type of breathing. So, yeah, I think there's definitely ways to give yourself more oxygen. But like you were saying, and they're talking about here, just when you start to make deliberate what is usually happening on an automated level with the autonomic nervous system, you can start to control your automatic responses a little bit more. You know, it gives you a little bit more self-control. Just makes sense, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe we'll look at that book in a future episode. But breathing's important, yeah.
And you've mentioned it for jiu-jitsu before too, right?
Right.
Different breathing strategies and calming yourself down and getting your oxygen.
I noticed something with my son. I was doing like a mat return where I was like picking him up in the air and slamming him down. And I noticed I would hold my breath when I picked him up, which is not unusual, right? Because you're bracing your torso because you're picking up a heavy weight. But then I didn't always start breathing again after I put him back. So I had to sort of train myself to breathe again or exhale so that I would keep breathing. Yeah, so that's the deal on breathing. So that's all I have for today, Dan, from this book.
Yeah, I
haven't finished it, but I think it's a pretty cool book, pretty awesome book. Like I'm sure like the other book, I had every third page dog-eared, I think. And could you read any of my notes?
Not really, right?
I can barely read
them. Dog-eared your pages. Is that going to be an issue? Like as I went through. I was doing it and then I was like, is he going to get it back and be like, why the hell did you undog-eared
all my pages?
So now.
I'll probably never look at the book again,
okay,
actually.
Okay, good.
Actually, my policy now, did I tell you that? Is if I give a book to somebody, I go, don't give it back. You don't read it. We'll never speak of this again. We don't have to. And then that's that, you know. Because I hate it when somebody gives me a book unrequested And then
it's expected.
It's like, what do I got to do? A book report on this for you now?
Right. And they're like, oh, did you get to read that? Like, there's suddenly pressure on you. I could see that.
I don't need
because
that.
Because, yeah, it's like, what'd you think of it? And you're like, I didn't read it. Suddenly there's a.
Oh, one thing I noticed, Marilyn Burke, I think in June, wrote a review for us. Did we talk about that?
No.
Yeah, she gave us a really nice review on iTunes. 5 stars. And she took the time to write some really nice things. She's
awesome. Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you, Marilyn. Her and John Burke, they are our super fan.
Right. Did we know that John didn't write it? Because I thought.
I think John wrote his own. No, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm certain Marilyn wrote it. Yeah. Yeah, she sent me some nice messages about the podcast as well. Thank you, Marilyn. So I think that's about it, Dan. I think we got to wrap this up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Awesome. So thanks, folks. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel or iTunes podcast. Rate and review us. Tell your friends about us. And we'll talk to you soon.